I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, Bexar County continues to experience increasing homicides related to domestic violence. The latest report from the Joint City-County Collaborative Commission on Domestic Violence finds that in 2023, there were 33 domestic violence homicides. This is a problem that's not unique to San Antonio. Much of the country saw a record spike in domestic violence cases during the pandemic, as the lockdown and job losses drove people into tense situations. But San Antonio leaders are urgently pushing for resources and community involvement to find and implement solutions. The data being gathered is helping, but we need to hear the stories of what is happening in San Antonio. Have you been impacted by domestic violence? What lessons did you learn? What do you think should have happened to keep you and your family safe? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio is currently ranked third in the state in the number of domestic violence-related homicides compared to other Texas cities and metro areas, but there is an urgent effort underway locally to address this chronic problem. A new report by the Collaborative Commission on Domestic Violence highlights key areas, including the growing number of community requests for assistance with domestic violence, the responses from law enforcement and the criminal justice system, and the services and support systems available to those impacted by domestic violence. It also sheds light on the far-reaching impact of domestic violence in San Antonio and Bexar County, emphasizing the need for continued support and intervention across all sectors of our community. With me today to discuss local domestic violence and what's being done about it, we're joined by Maria Villagomez, Deputy City Manager for the City of San Antonio. Maria Villagomez, welcome to The Source. Great to have you back.
Thank you.
Also with us, Martha Pelaez, the President and CEO of Family Violence Prevention Services. Martha, welcome back.
Thank you.
And also with us is Honorable Judge Monique Diaz, the 150th Civil District Court Judge, Bexar County. And Judge Diaz, welcome back to The Source.
Thank you.
So, Judge Diaz, if you could tell me more about this report, why do y'all put this out, and what are the findings?
Thank you for the opportunity to join you and discuss our report. This is our third annual statistical data report. And the reason we put this out is that the CCDV was created in 2019 in response to our community having the highest number of domestic violence homicides in 2018. And when we created the CCDV, we looked to a gap analysis that Metro Health had conducted of our community's response and intervention support services related to domestic violence. And that identified as a critical finding a need for a unified approach to collecting data and sharing it with our community to help us better monitor the progress of all of our efforts and to provide kind of a picture of the state of domestic violence for our community in one comprehensive fashion for the first time. So this is the third annual report. As you mentioned, it compiles data from law enforcement, the criminal justice system, services and support systems to families impacted by domestic violence. And some of the key takeaways that we'll talk about today are domestic violence homicide numbers having slightly increased from 2022 to 2023, our calls for support to 211 slightly increased as well, while calls to law enforcement and reports filed have remained relatively the same.
I do want to give our phone number, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you've got a question or a comment about domestic violence in Bexar County, have you experienced it? What do you think could be changed in order to make the community response to domestic violence more effective? And also, I want to give this number for anyone experiencing domestic violence. They can call the Family Violence Prevention Services 24/7 hotline. There's 211, but there's also 210-733-8810, and there's also a national domestic violence hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE, which is 7233 for anyone outside of Bexar County or anyone across Texas who is listening to our program today. There are services across the state of Texas, across the nation to help you out. Let me ask you, Mata Pelaez, President, CEO of Family Violence Prevention Services. The city is now putting the phone numbers like this out, and there's a new ordinance to put this in public restrooms, making this information available. Do you think that makes a difference? Having this information out there on billboards or wherever it can be, does that help?
Absolutely. Not only in terms of resources, letting the public know that resources exist and how to reach them, but also to let a victim who may see that sticker in a bathroom know that that person is not alone. It's very important that be transmitted. Domestic violence is very complex, and you and I, David, have talked over the years about this, but the complexities of the phenomenon that we call domestic violence are not going to be addressed all at any one time. So this is a part of one approach, as Maria Villagomez said. Education is a key element. We need to make people familiar and comfortable talking about domestic violence so that they know what it is, know how it sounds, where to reach out, what to do, what not to do, and how to pass it on. Because if we continue to treat it as we know it is, this secret thing, without opening up for conversations, we will never reach the goal, which is a very ambitious one. We'll probably none of us will see it getting rid of it. But we cannot stop at our efforts simply because it's a difficult problem. We have to face it and let it challenge us in every aspect.
Maria Villagomez, Deputy City Manager, City of San Antonio. How is the San Antonio Police Department, how have they been instructed to address domestic violence calls?
Yes, so one of the things that we have done with the police department is to provide them more training, especially when they go to a call and how they can measure do an assessment of the lethality of that individual and the danger that person may be. So we have worked closely with all of our patrol officers to ensure they know the signs, they know how to identify that, and also how connect them to a case manager in Metro Health, to one of our nonprofit organizations that provide services to the victims to get them the services, and in some instances to get them out of the house where potentially they could lose their lives if action is not taken immediately.
So SAPD, they're given the resources, they've been given the instruction, the training in order to try to address this. So someone who is a victim of domestic violence, they may have been given some information saying that the police won't believe you. And that's just, you know, this operation is being put forth at SAPD counters that.
Correct. We want the community to know that to call 911 or text 911 when they need assistance, and that we are there to help them, not to lose hope. This is a very complex situation, and we are putting all of our resources and working with our partners to make sure that we provide the support services that the members of our community need.
And the San Antonio Police Department, they have the personnel who address this.
They do. I mean, our patrol officers that are patrolling our streets, they address domestic violence with many other calls that they have to address. But just like mental health, we provide them with the resources and the training necessary to be able to assist the community.
All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll get some callers on the air, Claiborne and Alex. Our number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. We're having a discussion about domestic violence in Bexar County, San Antonio. We have leaders in the community who are coming together. They're marshaling resources. They're highlighting the need. This is an urgent effort in order to make San Antonio safer. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about domestic violence in San Antonio. It is a San Antonio problem, but it is not a problem unique to San Antonio. But San Antonio is unique in that it has taken aggressive steps in order to find ways to intervene in domestic violence. Resources have been put together, plans have been put in place, orders have been issued that we're going to treat domestic violence as the scourge that it is, and it will not be tolerated, and that they're going to find ways to get help to the people who need it. If you've got a question or a call, about domestic violence, 833-877-8255 is our number. And let's go to Claiborne. And Claiborne, you're on the air.
I just wanted to ask y'all to discuss that domestic violence and abuse are not just physical violence.
All right, Claiborne, thank you for that great point. We appreciate that. And Marta Pelaez, President and CEO of Family Violence Prevention Services, if you could respond to that.
Absolutely. So, part of the definition of domestic violence is, or the definition of domestic violence is, a progressive pattern of behaviors in a relationship where one of the members of that relationship is looking to own, if you will,
control.
The victim, control, through control, power and control, by emotional, psychological, verbal, financial, sexual, physical means. Those coercive behaviors that are not necessarily physical, the physical, are more scarring and more scary for the victim.
Right. So if the victim is in the country, maybe on a green card, or, you know, and then the other, the perpetrator would threaten, I'm going to call ICE on you, I'm going to throw you out, and they're going to deport you. But at your facilities, at Family Violence Prevention Services, if someone shows up and who has that situation, can you still help them?
Absolutely. Any victim of domestic violence will receive resources, will receive help at Family Violence Prevention Services. And that, which you mentioned, is one of the coercive behaviors. It doesn't have to be. And usually what we hear is the dramatic end of a life. But that life that was lost may have been suffering tremendously throughout many, many, many years from the effects of coercive controls.
Right, and that's why interventions are so important to be talking about.
Absolutely.
It doesn't go from zero to 100 right away. There are lots of ways, signs, opportunities to step in to prevent it from getting to the point of homicide. Let's go to another caller. We have Alex, and Alex, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. We always hear that representation matters. So regarding domestic violence, did the Greg Brockhouse domestic violence issue change anything at City Hall? Are there now any safeguards to stop people from hiding their records so they can run for elected office? Thanks.
All right, Alex. I really can't address, I don't have all the information in front of me. That was a story that was in the press a while ago. He's no longer a public official. So, how do we make sure, Maria Villagomez, Deputy City Manager, City Center, people don't get special treatment when it comes to these types of things? That, you know, it doesn't matter where, what station you are in San Antonio, you're going to be, this type of thing will not be, you won't get special treatment.
You know, special treatment does not occur in our police department or Metro Health Department. Anybody who needs assistance will be provided that assistance. If there's a perpetrator that has violated the law, there are consequences to their actions. And a person could be arrested and go through the criminal process and be held accountable for their actions. That is something that is important to us as an organization, especially to help those individuals that have been victims of domestic violence. Either physical harm, emotional harm, there are consequences to those actions.
Right. We've even seen it locally recently, in there are people in law enforcement. They have problems with domestic violence, and they're immediately dealt with, and it's made known in the press. They're not getting special treatment. Let's go to Sean. And Sean, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to point out, because I didn't catch who said it, but somebody said that more information is good for helping to decrease, because we're allowing people to know where resources are. We have over 40. I'm a social scientist. I'm citing research. We have almost 40 years of research showing that there is no evidence more information decreases domestic violence. The problem is stigma. And so the clear example is we have all kinds of information today and domestic violence is increasing. But there's lots of evidence showing that that's not the case. What does work are things like mandatory arrest policies and firearm restrictions for abusers, neither of which that we have here in Texas. So unless we are willing to stop lying to ourselves about we're going to put out information and actually do comprehensive legal reforms, these problems are not going to go get any better. Thank you.
All right, Sean, thank you for that. So Judge Monique Diaz, can you respond to that?
Yes. Well, I wanted to clarify one point, is that we do have firearm restrictions in the state of Texas. Anyone that is subject to a protective order or that has a domestic violence conviction against them is prohibited from possessing firearms, ammunition, or a license to carry.
They're supposed to turn over their firearms.
That's where we draw the line in Texas. We do not have the additional requirement that they then surrender their firearms. And so one of the things that we did through the CCDV back in 2020 is we developed a process for our community, for our judges to utilize within our discretion to ensure that our orders are being followed, that these prohibitions are being followed. We can take the next step of ordering individuals transfer or surrender their firearms to law enforcement or to third parties. So we created that process, and we've seen hundreds of orders requiring compliance with firearm surrender that we've implemented in our community. So I did want to address that that is something we are doing in Bexar County. And I agree that information alone does not necessarily reduce or stop domestic violence, but it does, we hope, encourage individuals to come forward that may have been hesitant or afraid for various reasons to come forward with their claims of abuse. We hope that the information we're putting out there lets folks know that there is help out there and this is how you find it.
Well, so we do know that we're getting more calls, right? That's something that's happening.
According to our data report for 2023, the calls from 2021 through 2023 have remained relatively the same. It's the numbers of homicides that we have seen. And let me clarify, the calls to law enforcement have remained relatively the same. We have seen a slight increase in calls to 211, non-law enforcement requests for support. And so in our community, that's what the data is showing and what our report tracks over the last 3 years.
And what do you make of that? I mean, why isn't it? So to the point of the caller, we're making all this effort's been going into promoting the numbers, getting the numbers out there, trying to do outreach. And he says it's not going to help. I mean, how do you?
The purpose
why not?
The purpose of the report and compiling this data for our community is not to quote-unquote, reduce domestic violence by virtue of providing the information. Providing the information is a basic first foundational step that we need in our community in order to monitor our progress and to get a true understanding of what's happening both in the experiences that people are having and in the impact of domestic violence on our community. I'll give one example. One of the findings in our report shows that there is a slight increase in the individuals who report having witnessed family violence. That's both adults and children, as reported by the Center for Healthcare Services. We know that when an individual witnesses family violence, in addition to being the victim of direct family violence, that increases long-term health, poor health outcomes like obesity, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, anxiety, depression, PTSD, suicide, amongst children and adults. So we're looking at what the cost is on our society to not do things about domestic violence. And so we need to continue working on identifying gaps.
So these are the downstream effects that can last generations that
exactly
need to be addressed.
And this helps paint the picture for our community and emphasize the need for continued support and services.
We got to take a break here. And also we're going to be doing some of our pledge drive. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're having a conversation today about domestic violence. A new report by the Collaborative Commission on Domestic Violence shows us there is a lot of work to be done, but work is being done. This is an urgent problem. Resources have been committed. We know this needs to happen, and it can be solved. With us in the studio today, Maria V. Gomez, Deputy City Manager, City of San Antonio, Honorable Judge Monique Diaz, 150th Civil Court in Bexar County, and Marta Pelaez, the President and CEO of Family Violence Prevention Services. You can call in with your questions and comments. We definitely want to hear from people who have had to deal with this and what they think needs to be done from their experience. What do they want us to know about this? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Grayson on the phones. And Grayson, you're on the air.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. And first, I want to say thank you for everything that you're doing. Because as a victim of a crime myself for over 17 years, I grew up under a violent family. So as a child, I did not have the skills or the tools to recognize what abuse was. And so putting that education out there is so, so crucial at the early childhood age. But what I want to ask you guys is the digital protection that is happening and what you guys are doing to ensure that that could be covered even more so, because my first husband for 17 years was extremely violent. And just being able to have access to any type of resources because of the control and his dynamic way, I had no way of reaching out. So even putting signs up in public restrooms, convenience stores, a way for me to find a way to get help for myself was very, very crucial. And I never saw those kinds of things. And so it ended up that the Comal County Sheriff ended up shooting and killing my husband while he was trying to shoot me at the same time. And it's only by the grace of God that his 9mm jammed and I'm alive today. But because of the issues with digital technology now and being able to track, that is why he found my location. And now, 10 years later, with the advancement of technology, a lot of people are scared. Even though I had a protection order, I knew that I was not safe because I knew that he could still find me. And with tracking and with being able to control people, it's not easy just to call 911. There has to be a more basic outlet for grocery stores or where, you know, you're allowed to go visit without any fear of your, you know, perpetrator finding out that you're trying to get any way or any resource that's located outside the home.
Grayson, I'm so glad that you survived. How are you dealing with all that? How does anyone go through that sort of a situation and carry on?
I have a lot of health problems from the violence. He ran over me in New Braunfels, and I was pinned underneath that van and a patrol car, and he tried to shoot me, and it just wasn't his day that day. And it took so much counseling, and it took so, I mean, PTSD all the way around, afraid to drive, afraid to leave my home. It just took many, many, many years. But coming out on the other side, it's good to know that there's people out there that know as a real thing. And a lot of times it starts in the family, but if you're just not aware how to recognize what that looks like, it's the norm. It becomes part of your life, and you think that's how it's supposed to be. So, you know, I've seen posters up before, and this started when I was, you know, 17. I married early, and there was no way for me to reach out. Even when he was jailed the first time and the officer saw the bruises around my throat, the black eye, I'm blinking at him, trying to communicate to him because I did not have the skills, but I could not verbally speak. I could not send a text on the phone. I couldn't do anything because he's always there, right there, either checking what I'm doing or eavesdropping, making sure I'm not communicating outwards so that he can have the control to remain in power the whole time. And just having something in the bathroom, if I had a pen, I could have written my name, I could have written my number, my address, anything. But the other problem of that is the control, knowing that you'll never have the independence. So if you leave, it's the same, you know, outcome, the dream of having independence. And I think people need to understand that there is a world out there to gain independence from that, because they use the control like you said, psychologically, emotionally, physically, and financially. And with today, everything going on, you know, it's so expensive just for food itself. It's hard for people with low income to know, hey, if I leave, how am I going to survive? Where am I going to go? And then it's one thing to communicate that message, but it's also one way to try to communicate back if you had the choice or a means to do that without being tracked.
Grayson, do you felt like your experience was unique, or have you met other people with similar experiences?
Oh, yes. There's many women, and, you know, with children that are really restricted to resources and they don't have as much movement as, you know, maybe an older teenager or a young adult, you know, that makes it even harder. But they need a way to communicate back. And I think that's very critical, because had I had the opportunity, like other women that I've met, and I've gone through a couple of women's shelters, you know, it's that it just didn't last long enough, because you got to understand that a victim is hypervigilant and is always looking over, because they know that if there's a way in, that perpetrator is going to find it. And so we need a way out. We need a way to communicate back. This education is great. Making the awareness is great, because there's still a lot of people that don't really understand that this is still a very serious issue. It's very common. And it's just a lot of the times it's cranked really hard down on a household. And, you know, you never know. One of my best friends lost her life on Valentine's Day. And she was a big real estate person here, always happy. You never knew what was going on behind closed door. And her and her son were shot to death by her husband. And so being that she was a big part of the community, she didn't have a way to get her communication out on the other side. And it just, it ends up like that, and it's so sad. With all the opportunity, all the other people who are willing to help, we need a way to communicate back. And we need a way that we can protect ourselves digitally, because there are all kinds of apps. There's all kind of tracking devices. You know, there's so many things that digitally we need to really protect ourselves.
Grayson, thank you so much for calling in your story. I'm sorry you went through all that, but calling in and sharing your story today, I think you did a lot of good. I appreciate that so much. Thank you. So let me ask you, Judge Monique Diaz, when you hear Grayson's story, what are your thoughts?
Well, my first thought is that she's incredibly brave for coming forward
strong.
With it. And very strong. And that she paints a picture of exactly why it is so hard for people to leave abusive relationships, and why it's not as easy as walking away as many people might think. It takes 7 or 8 attempts of leaving before you can actually leave an abusive relationship, statistically speaking. It is very common, like she stated. In the United States, it's 1 in 4 women, 1 in 7 men. Here in Texas, it's 1 in 3. Everything she says speaks to the truth of the nature of domestic violence. I want to specifically address her digital tracking question. I believe she stated that her unfortunate tragedy happened about 10 years ago. And since then, the laws have evolved somewhat to now permit within protective orders a specific request to prevent an individual from tracking someone else digitally. So I'm now seeing protective orders where that is common language included, and where we are granting that in our civil courts often to prevent that. And of course, the violation of the protective order leads to a criminal offense. So that is something that's being addressed. And then lastly, to her point that she grew up in a household where she was a victim of domestic violence or witnessed it, we recognize that as the Domestic Violence Commission, that is very key to us breaking generational cycles of abuse. And that's why for our 5-year plan going forward, we're going to release a report in the coming months that lays out our work for the coming 5 years. But one of the 3 main strategies we're working on is incorporating education on healthy relationships early in life. That's an initiative that Martha Pelaez is helping co-lead, trying to get into the schools and educate our children on what is a healthy relationship and what is not, so they can recognize those signs. As far as teen dating violence, there are different signs that parents and teens can look out for to indicate that they're in an unhealthy relationship or on their way to an unhealthy relationship. So that's one of our key focuses right now.
And Matapalais, what did you hear when you heard Grayson's story?
Well, before I say anything else, I want to thank Grace for her valor, for her strength, and for sharing her story. Thank you. Thank you so very much. I'm so sorry you had to go through all of that. You mentioned, Grace, two things that caught my ear. That is the powerlessness of the victim and the normalization. And that is what we are also fighting and addressing. Once domestic violence is normalized, there really is very little that you can ask anyone in that household to do, because simply, as they very well, out of their very own mouths, it is what I saw. You know, my mom told me, we went through the same thing with my dad, and look at my dad, you know, I didn't do anything, didn't call the police. I just adjusted, and you know, it happens mostly to women for a reason, because sometimes we don't do enough for our husbands, and
So the blame the victim.
Absolutely, and the normalization. So it's the normal thing. You see it in the abusers that come for intervention, and you see it in the victims as well. And the other is the powerlessness. So once you have adjusted yourself infinite number of times to the desires of the abuser, because you still want things to be like they used to be, you lose yourself in it.
Right, so they have to recognize that they're in danger and they need help. We have to figure out ways in order to make that work, because we heard from Grayson the barriers to getting that help. And we're going to take a break here. This is a one-minute break. Our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about domestic violence in Bexar County and San Antonio and how it can be addressed. And that the idea that this is a problem that San Antonio has and it's never going to go away, this helplessness in this problem, we have to highlight that is a falsehood, and it enables the problem to continue. We don't need to nurture the problem as we look for solutions by thinking this can't be addressed. Maria Villagomez, the Deputy City Manager, City of San Antonio, you know, how can we recognize this can be solved? We can get these numbers down, right?
We do. And I think one of the things that is very important to us as a CCDV is to incorporate the feedback of those survivors of domestic violence, like we heard from the previous caller that I'm very grateful that she called. We cannot do this alone. We need the help and the support of the community, and brave women like Grayson that call this number. We as the CCDV are in the process of putting together an advisory group that will help inform some of the actions that we are taking individual as agencies, for example, in the law enforcement arena. What can we do different? What can we provide resources to those individuals that can help the victims and recognize the signs? So I think it's incredibly important to get the feedback of those individuals with life experiences.
Matapalais, I had spoken to you a couple of weeks ago when word came out that the Trump administration was going to freeze all federal grants. There was a concern from you and others that this was going to directly impact the family violence prevention services, that federal dollars that you rely on aren't going to be there. And so where are we now on that? And now we have a state effort to cut back, a state DOGE. So it could be a double whammy for places like yours that are trying to support communities. What's happening?
Absolutely. Well, fortunately, up to this moment, nothing has realized all of the threats and all of the considerations and fears. Nothing has realized. It may be, and at my best moments, I am thinking that it may be that the National Coalition of Nonprofit Organizations had an impact on the administration, and those threats were called off.
So right now, you're okay.
I'm sorry.
You're right now, the right. money has not been frozen.
The money has not been frozen.
You were told that it was, and it's just chaos. Doesn't help.
Absolutely not. When you are dealing on a daily basis, minute to minute, with human crises that you need to tend to, the last thing that you want to be focused on or distracted by is whether you're going to have the money to provide the resources for the next family. So it has been a moment of respite for us in that sense. However, what I want to say to anyone listening to us now is, regardless of whatever happens at the federal level regarding funding, I know that we have a responsive community that will come to assist if we ask for that assistance.
Right. So don't let these headlines scare anybody from seeking help. There is still help available. Go get it. It's there if you need it. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
I'm going to go to a caller, Raul. And Raul, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I wanted to comment in that I believe she said 1 in 7 men that are on the end of the abuse. I had one of my children call 911. The officer that responded, because I asked him, hey, what's going on? How come you didn't check this out? His response was, I'm not a detective. And I've been at the losing end of this because she has expensive lawyers. She's a professional psychiatrist and knows how to coerce the kids into things. I don't think it's fair that anybody gets hurt. Let me say that men or women, but the system is weighted in Texas towards protecting the woman and not the men and the children from emotional abuse. It's not always just physical.
Well, thank you for the call. And so I want to get Marta Pelaez to quickly respond to that.
Well, sir, I am so sorry that is in your present. We do provide services to both women and men victims. In fact, we have had sheltered more men in the last 2 years than we have in our history of 47 years. So we do provide all of the same level of services, residential and non-residential, to women as we provide to men. In terms of children, same thing. And I know that the city is also emphatic in providing services and resources to the children. They do exist, and we bring the parents with the children and provide specific services and therapeutic services and everything else to the children as well. In fact, the majority of the victims are children.
So, Judge Diaz, what can the community do to support survivors of domestic violence?
Well, I want to step back for a moment and ensure the community understands that domestic violence is not something that just happens to a victim or a survivor. It happens to an entire family unit. It happens to the children in the family. And oftentimes, the people that use violence against a victim are victims of violence themselves. We see perpetrators or people who use harm have a history of trauma in many cases. And so what can the community do is the community can rally around efforts that help the family holistically. So it's, yes, we need to give support and services to the survivors, of course, but we also need to give the same amount of support and services to the people who use harm to help them break those cycles of abuse. We do that in part by, through the courts, sending individuals to the BIP program that Marta's organization provides, but that's one thing. Additionally, people can join our symposium. We have an annual symposium every year this October where members of our community and professionals can come learn more about the dynamics of domestic violence, resources available, and what you can do and the actions you can take on a day-to-day basis to help reduce and prevent it.
So there are resources, there is hope, there are allies out there. Anyone listening who thinks that they need help, they can call 211. And that help will be provided. I want to thank Maria Villagomez, Deputy City Manager of San Antonio, Judge McDiaz, 150th Civil District Court in Bexar County, Marta Pelaez, President and CEO, Family Violence Prevention Services. Thank you so much for coming up today.